Welcome in to the 48 Minutes podcast on Believe, presented by Bet Online. I'm Ross Geiger, the former NBA video coordinator, having spent time with the Bucks, Suns, and Knicks. And I'm joined alongside Bruce Bernstein, our four-time Emmy Award winner, who spent more than three decades at ESPN producing NBA shows, SportsCenter, and soaking up knowledge from the best hoop analysts in the business. And we're also joined by two-time Emmy Award winner, Michael World B. Freer, who is a senior writer at Stat Factor, specializing in writing advanced statistical NBA reports for various announcers across the league. This is episode number 98, the Jason Collins episode, as the one-time Stanford Cardinal wore number 98 for three different teams, the Celtics, the Wizards, and the Nets during his NBA career. Before we get into tonight's discussion, just a quick reminder, BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Bet online, where the game starts. And tonight, fellas, let's get started and roll right into our first quarter here, looking into Tuesday's Western Conference play-in matchups. And I figured we'd start out with the 7-8 matchup, where we have a last game of the season rematch between the Los Angeles Lakers, who will be squaring off with the Pelicans in New Orleans. Bruce, I'll start with you. Obviously, the Lakers had a dominating performance in game number 82 against the Pelicans, but do you foresee that happening again here in a big play-in game?
Here's the thing about the Pelicans. They are such a bizarre team, okay? In their final nine games of the regular season, they had a four-game home losing streak. Then they had a four-game road winning streak. I just can't trust a team like that. I mean, yeah. You know, they have enough talent to beat LA, obviously. They finished ahead of them in the standings. But I just, there's something about them. I mean, whether it's, you know, Ingram not kind of fully being back from his injuries and Zion being Zion. I mean, the only mainstay on that team has been really Herb Jones and CJ McCollum. And those two guys are not going to beat the Lakers. So I just, you know, I'm not really feeling the Pellies at this point.
World B, how are you feeling about the Pelicans? Do you think they stand any chance of ruining the way of King James here in the playoffs?
I mean, they absolutely have a chance. They didn't demonstrate it on Sunday. They got, you know, pretty much wiped up in a game they really, you know, needed. So that, you know, Bruce Manning, it's hard to get away from that. But now you're asking the Lakers to go in there and beat them a second time. And, you know, perhaps without Anthony Davis. We don't know yet. At last check, he was questionable after he left that game, after he put up a nice 30 spot against them. So it's hard. They've had a really good season, a really fun season the Pelicans have. And it's amazing that they're in this spot. It was just penciled in until like a week ago that they were going to be one of the playoff teams. And, you know, they just went on a little bit of a slide. And that game Sunday, and a game they had to have, was really That's one they're going to look back and go, what the heck?
You know, Ross, here's the thing, and I know you probably have something you want to say. I just want to throw this in quick. It's almost like the winner of this game is going to get Denver. The loser of this game, granted, will have to win another game to play in, but they're not going to get Denver. So it's almost like you could lose the battle and win the war, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting setup here with how the brackets kind of worked out and the West being as competitive as it is as far as, you know, who you might face next. But I think the Lakers aren't going to mess around here. Look, they've been in New Orleans since Sunday. I would assume they probably didn't travel home and just stayed there to get rest and make sure they weren't traveling back and forth. So I really like the Lakers in this one. I think they're going to obviously carry on the momentum that they had in their win on Sunday against the Pelicans. And then I think we'll see Pelicans in that second play-in game for a win or go home matchup, but should be a lot of fun with or without the former Pelican and Anthony Davis. I mean, obviously a lot rides on the legacy of LeBron James. He's super mindful of that as far as just adding another playoff berth to his resume. And for New Orleans, I think Bruce, correct me if I'm wrong, but like it comes down to whether or not Zion can produce, right? Like I feel like Zion's got to be the center of the attention for New Orleans. He's got to put up some big numbers for them to have a chance.
He's got to put up some big numbers. And, you know, I've been kind of disappointed that, you know, Jonas Valanciunas has really taken on kind of like an almost negligible role. I mean, he's a fairly quality big, and you would think in a playoff series, a guy like him who can provide some physical toughness and get a bunch of rebounds should be somebody that would also be expected to step up for New Orleans. And look, the Lakers have been on fire down the stretch. I mean, they finished up winning 11 out of their last 14 games and hit the play-in with all kinds of momentum, I think, particularly LeBron on Sunday. I mean, he just absolutely destroyed those guys, the triple-double. So Zion, yes, has to be big. CJ has to, I mean, everyone's got to be big for the Pelicans. And again, you know, and if there's no Anthony Davis, they might not have to be as big.
Yep. And so it sounds like you got the Lakers in that one. Am I correct?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
All right. World B, who do you got in that one? Lakers, Pels?
I mean, honestly, to me, it depends on AD. That being said, until further notice, I'll assume he's playing. And the Lakers are the pick right now. They're one of the best offenses since the break. They're playing the way you would want them to play. You know, they've had the third best. This is their third best record that they've had in the last 12 years. You don't think about it because they're in the play-in spot. Yeah. But they have 47 wins. They have more wins than last season when they went to the conference finals. So, I mean, yeah, it's been a disappointment because you expect them to be higher up in the standings. But, you know, just like everybody else, they're a 47-win team. And only the championship run in 20 and the following season, over the last 12 years, those are the only teams' records that are better than what the Lakers have right now for them. So until further notice, I'm taking the Lakers.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and take a look at that 9-10 matchup. Of course, this one is win or go home. And this one should look pretty, pretty familiar, as it's the Kings that look to stay alive and light the beam against the Golden State Warriors in Sacramento. Bruce, correct me if I'm wrong, but we saw a similar series just this past year, right? In the playoffs last year?
Well, yeah. I mean, that one went 7 games, and this one's going 1. So it's kind of like the extremes. I mean, look, since it's their second straight year playing each other in the postseason, I guess you could say it's the beginning of a rivalry of sorts. I mean, there's connections. Mike Brown, the Kings coach, spent 6 yep. years on the bench with Steve Kerr. But, you know, when I think about this matchup, and, you know, I really like both teams, it's like last year this was a 3-6 matchup. This year it's a 9-10. But I think those seedings say more about how the entire strength of the West has come up. Because really, the two teams' records are not a whole lot different than they were last year. Golden State is 2 games better. Sacramento is 2 games worse. But they went from a 3-6 to a 9-10, which tells you that, you know, they may still be about the same, but it's going to be a tough road to hoe. Whoever survives that game, they're going to get probably the Lakers or maybe New Orleans in that next game. So, you know, it kind of reminds me of what Jared Greenberg told us a few weeks ago about how it's a lot tougher to go from bad to good than it is to go from good to great. And that's what Sac is looking at here.
Yeah, most definitely. World B, what's your outlook on this win or go home matchup?
Well, this is an interesting series because you're looking at two teams. Mike Brown coming from the Warriors coaching staff. He loves to move the ball like the Warriors do. These are two of the top 5 teams in passes per game. These are two of the top 10 teams in movement, player movement around the court in terms of miles covered on offense. These are two of the, you know, they're all running around. But the thing is, the Warriors got back into this season with their defense. They really picked it up defensively. And then of the strangest of strange things, after 17 straight years of being ranked in the 19th or worse in defense, the Kings suddenly get up to 14th this season. They had the second best defense in the month of April, albeit, you know, shortened game. But they're finally playing defense, which they kind of have to do. They're really shorthanded without their perimeter shooters Malik Monk and Herter to do it. So, you know, it's going to be dependent on De'Aaron Fox and Sabonis even more. And Sabonis has not been great down the second half of the season. You know, his shooting numbers or whatever, not been good. He finally got the double-double streak, came to an end last week. But he's going to have to come up big. I think De'Aaron Fox is starting to play a little bit better down the clutch. He was one of the worst clutch players in the league for whatever reason most of the season. But he got better as the season went on in those spots. So it's really going to depend on them. And the defense is really interesting to me. I never would have thought I'd say this like a month ago, but which defense plays better is going to carry this team moving on.
Yeah, I totally agree there. And the thing with the Golden State Warriors defense is I think with how shorthanded Sacramento is, you mentioned that with Malik Monk and Kevin Herter being out, they're able to focus much more on De'Aaron Fox and Sabonis. Last year, they had to deal with Herter and Malik Monk, who were both healthy. So I think they even have a better advantage this year, even though this is still on the road. I think when you look at the makeup of this Warriors team that's a past dynasty, these guys get up for these games. They can't wait to go into Sacramento and hear the cowbells. And so for my dollar, I certainly have the Golden State Warriors winning this one, Bruce.
Well, you know, down the stretch, if you look at each team's final 12 games, the Warriors were 10-2. The Kings were 5-7. So if you want to talk about who's riding a little bit more of a momentum wave, I would say that it's the Warriors at this point. And look, Domantas Sabonis, he needs to impact winning. He's always put up numbers, but my one kind of flaw in his game, I never really felt that he ever put his stamp on a game. He needs to put his stamp on the game if those guys are going to beat Golden State, because if he doesn't, it's going to be Golden State. I think it's going to probably be Golden State anyway, but I really want to see him just kind of, you know, show me something I haven't seen from him.
Yeah, I'm sensing some Kevin Love vibes from you there, Bruce.
Kevin's got a chip.
Yeah, that was when he became a third wheel, though. I mean,
that's true.
As a second wheel, I think Sabonis would be fine.
They don't win without him, though. That third wheel,
100%.
He made the defensive stop on Curry at the end, just like Chris Bosh became the third wheel in Miami. But LeBron doesn't get a title if Chris Bosh doesn't get an offensive rebound in Game 6. So I agree with you. He's the third wheel, but, boy, third wheels come in handy.
Maybe our guy Brandon Podziemski will have a huge game for those guys and continue his solid play since he appeared on this show a week ago.
Yeah,
I like that.
He's been hot ever since he's been on the show, and, of course, that's good to see there for us. So hopefully pods can keep it going. Now, as far as prediction time, Bruce, I'm assuming you got the Warriors?
Yeah, I got the Dubs.
All right, World?
Yeah, I think it's going to be Golden State. And I just think Sacramento is just a little too shorthanded right now. That's going to hurt them.
All right. Well, let's move right into our second quarter here and look at the Eastern Conference play-in matchups that will be taking place on Wednesday, starting with the 7-8 matchup where former Sixer Jimmy Butler and the Miami Heat pay a visit to the 76ers in Philadelphia. This one should be fun, and I'm looking forward to the coaching battle. Nick Nurse versus Eric Spoelstra. Should be a lot of fun seeing what those guys draw up and how they get their guys going for this one. Bruce, what's your thoughts on this first matchup?
I really want Philly to win, because I want no part of them in the first round. They've won 8 games in a row. Since Embiid's come back, they haven't lost a game, okay? He's a monster. He's the real MVP, if you really want to get right down to it. I mean, you know, they're 5-0 in the games he's played since he's returned, which means that in the 39 games he's played, they're 31-8. I mean, that's as top shelf as you can get. Miami has also played fairly well down the stretch, but they've had a bunch of weak opponents in their 7 wins. I mean, Toronto a couple times, Atlanta, Portland, Washington. They did beat the Knicks as one of those games, but they lost to good teams, Indiana, Dallas, and Philly. So I don't see – I'd much rather if I'm Boston get a shot at Miami if they can then pick up a win in that, you know, second round. But I got Philly winning this one.
All right. Worldy, what's your take?
Yeah, this isn't last year's Miami team. That's for sure. Much different team. Much different record against good teams, as Bruce kind of alluded to there. They just haven't gotten the job done against the best in the league. So it's hard to immediately dismiss them based on what happened last year and what's happened in seasons past. But, man, oh, man, has there been a better seven seed in the NBA in recent memory than the 76ers? I mean, holy cow, they're going to – I mean, if they can make it out of – you know, make it out of this game and end up playing New York in the first round, Vegas would probably have them as a favorite over the Knicks. And, you know, it wouldn't be outlandish for that to happen. They're just a much different team, obviously, with Embiid on there. As Bruce mentioned, their record with and without and the way they score on, you know, when he's on the court and off is just amazing. It's Jokic like numbers, you know, the difference between on and off the court. Maxi benefits, they all benefit from having the league MVP on the court. So it's hard to see Miami going up there and getting the job done, but you know, it was hard to see Miami doing it last year for four games against Milwaukee. And, yeah, let's see. But, like I said, this is a different Miami team than we saw last season.
Now, did any of you guys catch the comments made by Kelly Oubre post-practice earlier this afternoon? They wrapped up their practice, getting prepped up for this big-time matchup. And some reporter asked Kelly about his thoughts on Jimmy Butler, and he said, he's like, I'm not falling for it. I'm not going to talk about him. He's a great player, and I know he looks at this kind of stuff. He wants people to say stuff and give him some extra motivation, and I'm not going to be the one to do it. So, seems like Philly knows what they're doing here. You know, they're not feeding into giving Miami any extra energy, and I thought that was wise from a unique character like Kelly Oubre to know when to keep his mouth shut.
You know, the guy who's really gonna, I mean, you know what a big fan of Bam Adebayo I am. I love almost everything about his game. He's gonna need so much help trying to go, because not only is Embiid a great player, he's got fresh legs. He's only played 39 games. That guy's gonna have energy like it's midseason.
Yep. Could be the difference maker there. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that I've got Philadelphia taking care of business at home. Philly's a tough place to play. So, Bruce?
I agree. Philly in one.
World?
Well, as a Knicks fan, there's nothing I'd like to see more, believe it or not, than see Miami win, but it's just not going to happen. We're going to get a Knicks-Sixers matchup, which is going to be maybe the best in the first round in the East.
No doubt. Well, let's talk about the not best play-in matchup in the East, and that is the 9-10 matchup, which is win or go home, and it's the Chicago Bulls playing host to the Atlanta Hawks. And quick fun fact for you both here, this is a play-in matchup that features the only two teams with below 500 records. Are you shocked to hear that, Bruce?
No. For one team, it's win or go home. And for the other team, it's going to be win and then go home.
So, I mean, we can get through this one here quickly. I mean, for me, I think Chicago's the more competitive team. They showed that even on Sunday. Obviously, World, I know that you had reached out to us, not understanding why they would exhaust their rotation of what's left with some of the guys that they have injured, but they put on a heck of a battle in Madison Square Garden and really tested the Knicks to earn that two seed, didn't they?
I guess that's what we're going to call it. I was stumped, but I mean, it's not the hardest thing in the world to stump me, but I didn't quite understand it. You got a veteran team that it doesn't mean anything. It literally doesn't mean anything. They're in their spot no matter what. And you got a game in 48 hours. You know you got a game in 48 hours. So, by all means, let's exhaust all our starters against one of the toughest teams to play against. And the Knicks, who are going all out as well. That's another story. We can get into some other time about Dante DiVincenzo playing all but 30 seconds of an overtime game. That's just, but Tibbs doesn't ruin his starters at all. That's just a myth.
Oh, here's the thing about Atlanta. Trae Young is back. 0-3 since he's been back. DeJounte Murray was just crushing it while he was away. So now it's like with DeJounte being used to kind of stepping up, now how's he going to handle his business with Trae back? I mean, and oh, by the way, they've lost 6 straight games and they gave up 157 on Sunday. So, I mean, the Bulls ain't all that, but they're better than this, even with their injuries. Dosunmu and Andre Drummond may not even play. But DeMar DeRozan absolutely torches Atlanta, so I look for him to have a big game and for Chicago to win that one, and then we'll play Boston in the first round and we'll see what happens.
I mean, yep. Think about this for the Hawks. Talk about not handling prosperity. You get back-to-back wins, a pair of wins, I should say, over the Celtics in a week. And one of the biggest comebacks the NBA has seen, 30 points, 30-plus points, and what do you do with that? You lose 7 of your last 9 games. And you lose to the Hornets. You lose to the Hornets. You lose to – I mean, how does that happen? You just can't – you're the Hawks.
Can't help yourself.
That's the best, that's the best answer, I suppose.
Actually, I slightly misspoke there. I said if Chicago wins, they'll get Boston in the first round. They'll get probably Miami, and then the winner of that will get Boston in the first round. So I don't want to
– Which happened last season. Remember that?
Yeah. I don't want to give up.
And Chicago had him down in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. So, World, before we move on here, I didn't get your answer, though. Who do you have winning this matchup?
I was really trying to avoid that at all possibilities, but I'm going to go with the Bulls. I think just too much there.
All right. And for the start of our third quarter, let's take a peek into the Western Conference first round matchups that are already set in stone. We'll start out with the 3-6 matchup. And I had some fun here kind of classifying each set in stone matchup here. So we got the Phoenix Suns and the Minnesota Timberwolves. And I'm calling this series the young versus old. Now, yes, I mean, they're not that much younger than the Phoenix Suns, but I think the two young guys on Minnesota are going to have to play big dividends. Number one, Anthony Edwards has to shine. And number two, on the defensive end, Jaden McDaniels, another one of their young guns, has to defend Kevin Durant or Devin Booker at times. So those two are going to be the keys to this matchup for me. But Bruce, I'll go ahead and start with you. I mean, this is an interesting matchup between the two. Do you think the Suns could pull off an upset here?
Yes, I think the Suns will pull off the upset here. I mean, these guys played 3 times during the regular season, and Phoenix won all 3, including at the beginning of the season when they hadn't even gotten their act together yet, okay?
Yep.
When Beal was, you know, here and there. The Wolves were good down the stretch. They were 12-5, but 2 of those 5 losses were to Phoenix, okay? The Suns have won 6 of 8, you know, and since Christmas, they're 35-18, okay? So they ended up with 49 wins. They've got, you know, Kevin and Devin, both averaging 27, 5th and 6th in the league in scoring. You've got Ant on the other side averaging 26. And, you know, the Minnesota bigs, you know, Gobert, Naz, and Kat are better than Nurkic, Eubanks, and Bol. But you've got the, you know, these dynamic scorers for Phoenix. And then you throw in Grayson Allen, who just signed a contract extension for 5 years, who's been one of the best, if not the best, 3-point shooter in the entire NBA this year.
Yeah.
So there's every reason to pick Minnesota. They finished 7 games ahead of Phoenix in the standings. But with all those bucket getters that Phoenix has, I think it's going to be the Suns in 6.
Wow. World B?
Well, there's really, if you look at the numbers, there's no reason to like Minnesota in this series because, as Bruce mentioned, while the Timberwolves have the best defenses in the NBA this season, by a wide margin, by the way, Boston was number 2, but it wasn't really close if you look at efficiency numbers. They were terrible against, you know, handling the Suns' offense. Their 2 worst games Minnesota had defensively came against Phoenix, including Sunday's game, which, you know, they got blown off the court, whatever. But, you know, their worst one was back in November when they gave up 146 points per 100 possession. That's just, you know, ridiculous when you think about how good Minnesota is. That being said, you know, I'm still going to go with the Timberwolves. I think having a home court advantage, every time you want to get on the Suns bandwagon, every time this is going to be it, something, you know, it just doesn't work out that way for whatever reason. Now, they close the season strong, so maybe there's something to that. Their losses, you know, down the stretch weren't that bad, although they did lose to the Spurs. That's inexcusable under any – I don't care about – I know Wemby's great, but that's unacceptable. So all the signs point to Phoenix. I just think this is Anthony Edwards' time to shine if he's going to take that next step in the stratosphere of this league. And he has to, because he was terrible in the season series against Phoenix. I think he shot 31%. There wasn't anybody really good for Minnesota in this series. There's no individual. I don't think anybody averaged 20 a game. Karl Anthony Towns, I think, had the highest with like 17 a game. Rudy Gobert didn't even average 10 boards a game against Phoenix. That's his thing. That's all he does, grab rebounds. He couldn't even grab 10 a game against Phoenix. I think it was only 7. So all the numbers point to Phoenix. They have the veteran leadership. I'm going to go with Minnesota anyway. I think their defense, and they'll have enough offense. I liked what I saw the other night or last week when we had did the playback against 40 minutes live against
Denver,
which was a good game until about midway through the fourth and Denver pulled away. There was a lot to like about Minnesota in that game. Sunday's game, not so much. And so it's I can understand taking Phoenix. I'm just going to go with Minnesota.
Now, I'm a big believer. You just can't turn on the switch and start playing good basketball. And even if you look at some of those recent wins by the Phoenix Suns, you know, one came in Los Angeles where the Clippers played without their entire starting five, which we watched at the end of playback that night. And then their last one came in a late break victory. Brad Beal got a steal on De'Aaron Fox and, you know, won the game by 1 point. So they were just squeaking out wins there. I'm going to go with Minnesota that had sustained success throughout the year. And if Minnesota wins, we might have a case in point, with the case being Anthony Edwards is better than Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and Brad Beal at this stage of their careers. And the point is certainly a pun intended, because Mike Conley might just go on to show us all how important a true point guard is in this series. And he's been playing exceptional ball here as of late and could be a real difference maker in this series as far as the Suns. How do they handle the defensive pressure of one of the better defensive teams in the league and the Wolves? And then, you know, Mike Conley on the other end, I think he's going to keep that group in check, make sure everybody's operating, making, you know, where they need to be, the space, the timing. All that stuff matters in the playoffs. And as much as I want to talk about Anthony Edwards, I think Mike Conley is another big key to that series, because he's the one that's going to get Karl Anthony Towns back situated with this group. He's the one that's going to put Gobert in good positions to be successful offensively and really rally these guys. And so I'm going to go with Minnesota with you, World B.
You know, one of the things about, you know, Minnesota that, you know, because they're such a great defensive team, a lot of that is Rudy Gobert. But, you know, Phoenix doesn't really get a lot of, you know, points in the paint. So I think, you know, with Durant and Booker and Grayson Allen, Gobert's not going to be blocking his usual number of shots, because those guys aren't going anywhere near him. So if they're able to kind of make some shots, I think it kind of neutralizes what he does best.
Yep. It's going to be a fun series. I think that one's certainly, you know, fair to say it's a toss up and should go 6 or 7 games. So that should be a lot of fun. Now for the 4-5 matchup, we have the Dallas Mavericks and the Los Angeles Clippers. And I've got to refer to this one as star power. It's Kyrie and Luka versus Harden, PG, and Kawhi. So Bruce, I mean, that's a lot of names right there as far as star power is concerned. Who do you like more for this series?
You know, both of these teams turned out to be better than I expected them to be this season. I only kind of started really respecting Dallas late in the season. And a lot of that, I think, was because I never really felt like the Kyrie-Luka chemistry was going to get where it needed to be, but it did. And then, you know, the two young bigs were really good for Dallas. And again, when they brought in PJ Washington towards the end, he was a real difference maker for those guys. So I really think Dallas has a little bit more of a head of steam hitting the postseason than the Clippers. Although, you know, I think this series has seven games just written all over it. I mean, Dallas has the guards. LA's got the forwards. The centers are roughly the same, maybe a slight edge to Dallas there. And I love the coaching matchup. Tyronn Lue against Jason Kidd. Those are two good coaches. And, you know, Ty has a chip, and I give him a slight edge. So even though I probably made it sound like I'm going with Dallas here, I'm not. I'm going to go with the Clippers in seven in the series.
All right. World B?
This is of all the first-round series, this is the one that is the most pressure-packed because there is more pressure on both these teams to get out of this round than any of the other ones. I don't care if you're Boston. I don't care if you're Minnesota. I don't care whoever it is, the Oklahoma City. This is the one because you're looking at Dallas that made the big trade last year for Kyrie, paired him up with Luka. They have a great season this year. But if it doesn't work out and they get knocked out in the first round, what have you gotten for all that stuff? You signed him in the offseason. What did it get you? A first-round exit. And in L.A., you really brought it back. You made Kawhi. The rules were changed, so Kawhi would play all the time, not the load management. They changed the rules. He's out for being a free agent. He plays so many games. He and Paul George are playing together. They got James Harden, which was a big deal. And you go next season, they're going to a new arena. And what's it going to get you if you get knocked out by the Mavericks? All that work, all that energy, and all those moves you made, and you're out in one round. So whoever loses this series is really got – I don't know what's going to happen in the offseason with that group. But that being said, I really think the coaching edge goes to Ty Lue. I'm a big fan of his. I think five coaches better. I don't think I don't know who they are in the league. I think this is going to be Kawhi's time to shine. I agree with Bruce. If it doesn't go seven, I'll be surprised. They're just that tough. They have that much star power, almost 50 all-stars combined in this matchup. If you combine everybody. So it's a ridiculous number. There's so much star power in this. So many clutch players too. I mean, Kyrie, will forever have the shot. Luka has been a playoff performer. We've known that. I just think it's going to be I'm going to take the team that has James Harden. Who would have thought that?
Well, you know, the thing about the Clippers, there was never any denying that they had, you know, future Hall of Famers on their team. My concern with them all along was, will they be able to maintain their health? And they have. So, you know, when you've had a good, healthy season – I mean, I don't expect anybody to get injured now unless it's just kind of a freak thing. So that's another reason I give the Clippers a slight edge. I mean, you know, they really showed me something. And they did win the season series 2-1, for what that means, if anything.
Yeah. Now, I've got my eye on the Clippers. I think they're going to walk away winners in this series. And I think a big part of that's going to be the play of Terrence Mann, of all people, because he's going to be tasked with the job to try to slow down Luka. I think he's a guy that matches up well with Luka. He's just got to stay out of foul trouble, which is easier said than done. But I like the depth of the Clippers. I like their coach a little bit more than Jason Kidd with Ty Lue. And I think that this will be their series to win. And as you pointed out, World B, things will definitely be a little interesting in Dallas if this is a first-round exit. So buckle up for
that. It'll be interesting in Clipperland, too, if it works out that way.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Now, for our fourth quarter, let's get to the Eastern Conference with the first-round matchup previews. And we'll start with the 3-6 matchup, which I think you know where I'm going with this one. I'd like to call this one the Game Ball Series between the Indiana Pacers and the Milwaukee Bucks. So, Bruce, I'll start with you. Who do you think might walk away with the Game Ball?
You know, they had an odd series this season because they ended up playing an additional game because of the in-season tournament. So they played five times this year, and Indiana won four of those five games. Now, in the game ball game, as we all remember, Giannis had 64 points in that game. But Giannis may not even be ready to go. I mean, you know, I would imagine he'll do everything in his power to get out there. But right now, I mean, you know, as of Monday afternoon, Doc Rivers was like, well, you know, we hope he'll be ready, you know. So the Pacers really kind of shredded Milwaukee's defense this year. They scored almost 129 points a game against those guys in the five games. And I think that the fast pace that they like to play at has a real chance of kind of wearing out some of the guys on Milwaukee, in particular a guy like Chris Middleton, who is getting up there, and he's still kind of rounding himself into shape. He's almost there, but he's not quite there. Then you got Brook Lopez, who's like 35 years old, okay? So, you know, he doesn't like to run up and down the court all that much. And, you know, but if Dame plays like Dame, which there's every reason to expect that he will, he's going to have a tough time keeping up with Halliburton, but maybe Pat Bev will spend a bunch of time, you know, harassing him. And Pat Bev has been very good since he's joined the team. If Giannis is healthy enough and Middleton has efficient games, I think Milwaukee will figure out a way to win the series. But again, the Pacers won 7 of 10 down the stretch and the Bucks lost 7 of 10 down the stretch. And I'm a believer in momentum, as I've mentioned in a couple of these other series. So it looks like, you know, Indiana has some things going for them, but I'm not giving up on the Bucks. I got them winning this in 7.
All right. World B.
Well, I mean, I don't know what reasons there are to believe in Milwaukee. Certainly if Giannis is not healthy. Wow. He makes such a difference on that team. It's why he's a legitimate MVP candidate, not just the numbers, which are, you know, out of this world as a rule. But when he's on the court, the difference when he's on the court and off the court, even when he's playing, they score about 11 more points per 100 possessions when he's on the court as opposed to off. That's a ridiculously – that's not, an, you know, stratosphere. It's not Jokic level. But that's a real difference maker. He is a difference maker. And we've seen him gut it out before and not be 100% and carry a team to a championship. We saw it that year that they won the championship. He can gut it out. It's just we got to know how he is. And I think Bruce is right. The Pacers are going to go up and down. If they've learned nothing from five games against Milwaukee, is we can run them out of the gym. We're young. They're not. We can take care of this. It's going to have to be the strategy the whole series. If we fall behind by a game, I don't care. We got to keep doing this. It's really their only chance because Indiana's defense is just not good. It got better, but it just isn't. It's not their style. They want to run. You run at that pace, you're going to give it up at the other end. We see it like in football when they used to have the run and shoot. Well, there's a trade-off. You're going to give it up at the other end. So if the Pacers can do that and put the pressure on them, I think they can win this series without Giannis being healthy. I joked, you know, to you guys, you know, after the game yesterday, after Sunday's games, you know, what a job by Doc Rivers to take the team that was second best in the East and turn them into the third best team in the East. But you know, it's there were other circumstances that went into that, obviously, and the health of Giannis being. Number one, Damian Lillard's got to be a star.
Yep.
He hasn't been a star in this season. He's had moments, but they didn't bring him here for moments. They brought him here to be a star. He's getting paid the big bucks to be a superstar. Giannis didn't go out and want a regular guy. He wants a superstar. So this is his time to really be that superstar.
Ross, you watch the Bucks more than any of us watch the Bucks. One guy that none of us have mentioned so far has been absolutely a beast down the stretch, and that's Bobby Portis. I mean, Yes. Is he uniquely kind of positioned to do well versus a team like Indiana? I mean, has he really got the X factor label for this series?
I think he does. I think Bobby Portis is going to have a big series. It seems like he really truly believes and respects in the position Doc Rivers has put him in this season. It's showing out there on the court. He's had big games, big quarters in the second half that have helped propel this team or keep them in games. So he's going to be very important with or without Giannis, obviously more so without him. But, you know, I think that this whole series just rests in whether or not Giannis is healthy. And I'll preface this by saying I have no inside intel on this. In fact, if I tried to text him right now, the phone's pretty much powered off because he is locked in, just knowing how he is from year to year with the stuff come playoff time. But if anything, I'd expect Giannis to maybe sit out game one, kind of see what happens in that game, and then try to rush back for game two. That's my prediction without any inside knowledge. I think he'll see if Dame Lillard can carry the load in game one. But if they lose that one and fall behind, he'll try to tie the series up while still in Milwaukee and give it a go on that injured calf. But for the series, I've got the Pacers.
So, Russ, I mean, one of the reasons that Milwaukee changed coaches midseason was for the playoffs, right? Mm-hmm. Now, we, you know, World and I both talked about how, you know, there's going to be the potential for Indiana to just, you know, run and wear those guys out. What do you think Doc can come up with either defensively or offensively using Lillard to kind of facilitate a slower pace and try and limit all that running? I mean, have you seen anything from Doc that leads you to believe that he might succeed in that area?
Yeah, I think it'd be more, half court sets, not pushing the ball as much, getting into that running game and utilizing Damian Lillard in the pick and rolls. Now, of course, we haven't seen as much Giannis and Dame pick and rolls as everyone would have liked to have seen or imagined we have seen. But when Giannis isn't on the court, there are a lot of pick and rolls that go on with Brooke Lopez and Bobby Portis. And so I think we're going to see a lot of those to make sure that Dame gets the attention offensively that he should. And then it's going to come to the other guys knocking down shots on the swing, moving around the basket. But the thing is with this running gun Pacers team is if you're not hitting shots and they're getting it, they're going, and it makes for a long night. So guys like Malik Beasley, Pat Connaughton, Jay Crowder, and all those other, you know, reserve players, they've got to come ready. They've got to shoot the ball at a high clip, and they can't be expecting Damian Lillard to just go out and shoot 14 of 18 from the field every night in the playoffs. I know he's capable of that, but we haven't seen it a lot this year, and that's a tough thing to ask for.
You know, to Bruce's point about trying to slow it down, to your point, Ross, when the Bucks, before the Bucks got Doc Rivers, they had they ranked third in the NBA in possessions per 48 minutes, the pace statistic. They were third in the league. Under Doc, they've gone into the bottom half of the league in pace. They get about, I think, five or six fewer possessions per 48 minutes. So Doc, I agree. Doc is going to try and slow this down. And he's shown, if nothing else this season, this is the style he wants to play. So it is a good counter to what Bruce and I were talking about the Pacers trying to move it up and down the court.
Yep. Now, for our 4-5 matchup, let's move on here. I just want to say I'd like to call this series the NBA TV series because it's between the Orlando Magic and the Cleveland Cavaliers. And World B, since I did offend you on this one, I will let you do the honors to go first and talk about this matchup. But you can't disagree with me. I mean, if you had to do the scheduling, this is going on NBA TV, right?
Sure. I mean, look, you got Paolo Banchero, who was the number one overall pick 2 years ago. He leads his team to the fifth best record in the league, and nobody knows him. I mean, he's stuck in Orlando. That's just how it is. They got they got to make a run. It's a good matchup. I think it's interesting that Cleveland, with a chance at third or second, kind of went into the tank on Sunday and put themselves in a position where they'd rather play the Orlando Magic, which is fine. If there's a team out there that needs to get out of the first round after what happened last season, it's Cleveland. Should be a defensive battle. If you're looking, we just talked about how the Pacers like to go up and down and the Bucks have a lot of offense. This isn't it. The Magic were the best defense after the All-Star break. Cleveland's been a top defense all season. And, if Orlando can shoot the ball, we've talked to every time you come to me during the season and we talk about the Magic, can they shoot the ball? They have Franz Wagner, one of the great young players on the team, 19 a game, whatever. He was the worst three-point shooter in the league this season by the numbers. He was the worst. And he wasn't alone on there. Paolo Banchero, I love the guy, his game. I think if he can be a star and carry a team to a playoff victory, only boosts his reputation. But he doesn't have the – he was a better shooter this season than last season. But it still isn't exactly, we'll call it, elite level yet. So these guys have to shoot. And if they can, they have a chance to get out of this series. I think they're going to make it out of the series. But if they don't shoot, it could be – 4 or 5 and out for them, too.
You know, the Cavs had that brutal 5-game West Coast trip from March 31st to April 7th, where they went 1-4. And that really, we talked about that road trip for a week or two before it happened. And it really kind of knocked them for a bit of a loop. Now, the last two games, you know, Donovan Mitchell has sort of returned to form, so to speak, 62 points in his last two games. And I mean, I think their starting guards are far superior to Orlando's with Darius Garland and Spida. And there's a lot of bigs bouncing around off each other in this series. You know, you have Allen and Mobley for Cleveland and the aforementioned Wagner brothers, Paolo and Wendell Carter Jr. for Orlando. And both of these teams kind of struggle to score, but both teams will guard the crap out of you. I mean, you know, Cavs have better defensive numbers in terms of opponent's field goal percentage, but the Magic are a better rebounding team. So I'm giving Cleveland a slight edge in this series based on Garland and Mitchell. I just think they're a bit more dynamic, and I'm going with Cavaliers in 7.
All right. Well, I'm going to join World B here. I'm going to go with the Orlando Magic. And along the same lines as what we had talked about, or World B brought up wisely as far as what's at stake for the Mavericks and the Clippers. A lot's at stake here for the Cleveland Cavaliers with maybe the future of Donovan Mitchell in this series. And I was a little shocked how much they kind of tanked that last game on Sunday to try to get this matchup. And I just don't have good vibes about that, about just, you know, tanking a game at the very end there, wanting to play this team, a young up-and-coming team that's brought it all year long. I think Orlando just got a bigger chip on their shoulder, the same chip they've had this year. Add an extra one on here for the playoffs, and I think they're going to find a way to get it done, and that's going to come on the defensive end by getting these offensive players on the Cavaliers kind of off their games and maybe get them a little disengaged themselves defensively, because as we know, a lot of offensive players, when they're not shooting the ball well, seem to let it kind of transition to the other side of the floor, and maybe that's what's going to help them break through offensively. But I've got Orlando, but it's not going to be easy. It's going to go 6 or 7.
I don't think there's anything easy about this series. No, there's no way. I was saying about 4 or 5 games if the Magic don't shoot, but I agree with Bruce. This could be 7 games just because somebody has to win these games. Uh-huh.
And along the same lines of, you know, nothing's going to be easy about this game. It won't even be easy to find on your television. So,
nice.
It'll be 90s basketball at its best.
Yeah.
It probably will be, yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, before we go ahead and close out the show, let's all give us our one-liners here to wind things down. Bruce, I'll start with you.
Oh, I thought you were going to start with World B.
I'll start with you here tonight, and then I'll come back around. Okay. Sorry about that.
All right, that's okay. I'm going to tell you what my least favorite thing from this season was. My least favorite thing this year was the series of disasters that befell the Memphis Grizzlies. Ja Morant was suspended for the first 25 games, then played just 9. Steven Adams had season-ending knee surgery before the season began, then was traded. Marcus Smart missed 62 games. Desmond Bane missed 40 games. That, my friends, is how a 51-win team from last year turns into a 27-win team this season. The Grizzlies need to stock up on bubble wrap for their remaining healthy players over the summer and hope for better luck next year.
Well said there, Bruce. And I'm going to give my favorite thing here since I didn't mess up the order. And my favorite thing about this season was actually Memphis's GG Jackson's rise to elite rookie relevance. Obviously, he was a guy I liked in the draft prospect time around the draft workouts, and really pleased with what he can bring to this team next year. Now, real quickly here, my least favorite thing was how quickly many turned on Scoot Henderson already this early in his young career, but a big summer ahead of continued development lies ahead for Scoot, and I'm here for it, and so should you. So for a draft class that isn't being marketed as that strong, Scoot might save this year's Las Vegas Summer League. So you better believe I'll have my popcorn ready. World B, what's your one-liner?
Is basically, you know, we've talked about how great the Western Conference was, how many great teams there were this season, and there was some really good teams, but we got to keep a little perspective on this. We had some bad teams this season. I mean, really bad teams. We had five teams that lost 60 or more games. That was more than the previous two, as many as the previous two seasons combined. The last time we had more 60 loss teams, you have to go back over a quarter of a century to 1997-98 when they had six 60 loss teams. So we had a good year. It was top heavy in the West, because there were a lot of bad teams in the NBA this season.
Yep, definitely were, but made it for a fun year to have a lot more top-heavy teams. So
absolutely.
With that will do it for this edition of the 48 Minutes Podcast on Believe, presented by Bet Online. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back with you next week to be sure you're up to date in 48 on all things around the association. Take care, everybody.